time for the Zoom table on Niagara in the Morning from 610 CKTV.
And we say good morning to Jeff Bolichowski, Senior Media and Policy Analyst at Armstrong Strategy Group. Jeff, how you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Thanks for having me in on this hot, sweltering day.
It's sweltering day, that's for sure. Chris Richard from Personal Injury Lawyer with the Graves and Richard. Chris, how you doing?
Good, good. Hey, we can't complain about heat. We could be in BC.
Well, and that's the thing. Did you see the number from yesterday in BC? 47.5.
Astonishing.
Oh my God! That's I saw that. That topped the highest temperature ever in Vegas. Vegas's was like 47.2. It's hotter than it's ever been in Vegas, in British Columbia of all places. Like, that's wild.
They were talking in Arizona about how much hotter it is in British Columbia. Arizona.
That's the place where you just assume that you're melting when you go outside in the sun, right? Like, that's just absolutely. So here, I asked everybody this yesterday. The hottest place you've ever been?
Southern Nevada.
Cool, okay.
I think Southern Florida in August was that was next level.
That's
a sticky one.
Yeah, I was going to say that'd be a real muggy heat, kind of like the stuff we've had, but just kind of bumped up to another degree, eh?
Yeah, I packed, this was actually my honeymoon, and I had I'd packed just kind of regular shorts and T-shirts, and immediately we had to buy different shorts and T-shirts because, you know, regular Canadian shorts and T-shirts were not appropriate. Everything needed to be big and baggy.
Just a little bit. Either of you either of you two love the heat, though?
Not me. I'm a fall and spring type of man.
I never complain about the heat because I know winter's coming. So give me as much heat as you can for as long as you can.
We are past the longest day of the year, so the days are getting shorter. So we are getting closer to winter, just to that out for everybody. Hey, either of you two Habs fans?
I'm a Red Wings fan, so not such a great place to be right now.
Yeah, you're in a tough hole, that's for sure. Chris, you?
Not as tough a hole as it is to be a Leafs fan.
Well, true.
Yeah, you know what? I'm a baseball fan, so I can't wait for the Leafs to get eliminated so that media can focus a little more on the Blue Jays rather than the Leafs.
So do you even take a rooting interest in this one? Because I'm not a Habs fan either, but I found myself, like, I'm fully supporting the Habs.
Yeah.
I don't really watch once the Red Wings are out of the playoffs, which means I haven't really followed that that much over the past few years, but... You know, on balance, I'd rather have the Habs win than than a team from Florida.
Chris, you followed it all?
Not really. I'm having it back in 93. I was a big hockey fan, so I find with the Habs making the final, I'm having flashbacks to 93.
you might be thinking of those early 90s with this Jays team, though, too. Like, if you want to talk about the Jays for a second, like, this, here's a team, like, my God, like, in terms of the lineup, like, you look at the batting lineup, you look at that and you just go, you salivate. If the bullpen could ever do anything meaningful, like, this team could be just a juggernaut.
Yeah, well, just remember, it's baseball, right? In 2015, before we had that incredible run, I think they were right around 500 at the trade deadline, and then just decided pretty much not to lose in August. So anything can happen in baseball, and it's a fun team to watch.
Well,
it's a fun team to watch until the bullpen comes in.
Then you're just like, come on, please don't blow this. Like, and Manoah comes in that other night, pitches a good game. Here's a guy who's only had a handful of starts, like, does a good job, and then the bullpen just, here, let's just throw it away. We don't want this win. Why do we want that, eh? Either of you two be geared up to go to a Jay game if they do? Because there's been talk of maybe the end of August type of thing, them coming around when we're hitting step three, and maybe they'll have some sort of capacity.
Yeah,
once I'm vaccinated.
Yeah, I get my second vaccine actually Thursday, and so if they came back in August, I've actually had conversations with my friends, and we've decided, yeah, if they're back in August, we're going to try to go to a game.
I go next week, so hopefully, by the time they reopen, I'll be in tip-top shape to actually go to games again.
Okay, so neither of you have got dose number two yet. I managed to get mine on Sunday. Was yours as much of a headache trying to get that second? I don't know when you had to try, but trying to get it.
I tried yesterday. I could not get an appointment locally. I have to go all the way to Hamilton for it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
I was
AstraZeneca. How did yours go, Chris?
Yeah, I was AstraZeneca for my first shot, so I qualified I don't know if it's been a few weeks, I think, since I qualified to get the next shot. So for me, there wasn't that big rush like there was yesterday. So it was no problem. I did it from my phone on the app and there was no wait.
Really? Nope. See, when I went through mine, because I was AstraZeneca my first shot too, and on that day I was like refreshing all, and to Jeff's point, like at first they were trying to send me to Cayuga, to Mississauga, to anywhere but Niagara, and I just kept hitting refresh on the thing. Didn't have anything else going on that morning, thankfully. And then finally a couple of appointments popped up in the Niagara region. I'm like, okay, well that's kind of weird, but it's amazing that it's been this gong show of, you know, basically everybody kind of compares it to getting concert tickets or something like that to try to find these appointments. It's been frustratingly difficult, hasn't it?
I take it as a positive. It shows that people in Niagara really want to get vaccinated and that uptake here is high.
Yeah.
I just like it if they had the amount of appointments that we want, I think.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is a lot of it is, to Jeff's point, it's people trying to get their second shot earlier, right? Because most of these people had a second shot appointment when they had their first, and now that they can be moved up, people are taking advantage of that, and that's a good thing, right? I mean, we were looking at everybody being their second shot done kind of by October, and we should be more looking the end of August, I would think, once everybody's done. So I mean, it's all positive. You know, a few headaches, I'm not going to complain.
How incredibly impressed are you about that, though, Jeff? Like that we're sitting here when at the beginning of this year, sure, there was a couple of doses of vaccine going in stateside and in the UK. But by the end of in the last couple of months, did anybody think we'd be saying by the end of summer, we could have everybody who wants two doses, we could have two doses in their arms?
No, it's really amazing how this is rolled out. And it's even more amazing how quickly the vaccine came together. If you look at some of the ways that these companies developed the vaccine, there was already a lot of work being done on coronaviruses. But the approval process was really sped up by having them do a lot of things they normally do in sequence. They did them in parallel.
Yeah,
so they did them at the same time. They were going through the approval process as they were developing the vaccine. It's really remarkable how they managed to streamline this and get it into so many arms all over the world.
And we go into step two tomorrow. Everybody looking forward to what, a haircut maybe, or maybe something else?
A haircut would be blessed right now.
You know, I'm a little different on this. First off, my wife went to hairdressing school when I was going to university, so I've been looked after during the entire pandemic. So that issue hasn't applied to me. And other than that, you know, I'm not actually sure that my life is going to change that much next week. You know, I spend my time, I play a lot of tennis, and I've been playing a lot of tennis. You know, I patios are open. I had a meal with my wife on a patio on the weekend. I try not to shop. So, you know, stores opening or malls opening are certainly not going to impact me very much. So maybe it's just a statement on my life, but I don't think this next phase is going to have a big impact.
I'm in a higher risk category. So, you know, everything opening up and being fully vaccinated really opens the world for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Like I was going to go to Chris's point. I'm like, are there things that you've realized that you like doing a little bit more over the last 18 months, or things that made your life easier this way? That's like, yeah, once, even if everything opens up, I'm still going to do it this way. Like a lot of people have kind of adopted the curbside pickup for groceries and stuff like that. And anything for either of you?
Oh, I was doing curbside pickup even before the pandemic hit. But I think one of the things that people are going to miss is actually going into a physical office. There's nothing that beats the camaraderie of actually having coworkers around you, having a rapport in your workplace. And I think the transition to remote work is going to be significantly overstated.
What do you think, Chris?
I agree on the curbside. I'm doing, I continue to do that. I think it's easier. I don't forget anything when I'm sitting at my computer at home.
That's true.
So that's good. I'm not sure. In my business there, I mean, we're going to work from home is going to be a little more intermittent than a regular part of our work. But it is kind of nice now to have the technology and setup where I can take a morning and get a few things done from home rather than rush into the office.
Yeah, I love that idea that you don't forget things for groceries, because I'm terrible at that. You walk through the store, I swear there's something else. I'm like, I'm going to go down two more aisles just to see if I can figure out what it is that I know I'm forgetting at this point in time.
Back to the Zoom table on News Talk 610 CKTB.
And joining us this morning, Chris Richard and Jeff Bolachowski with us on the Zoom table. Guys, the St. Catharines City Council last night announcing, look, that they're going to pass along and not do Canada Day festivities in exchange. They're going to have, you know, a day of essentially mourning and thoughts and, you know, reflection, I guess, on the situation that has happened in residential schools over the years and what this country is kind of going through at this point in time. Smart move by the municipality?
I think it makes sense in light of the things we've recently discovered in, you know, the Maryvale and residential school and out in Kamloops. I think what's important to note is that we're not necessarily canceling Canada Day as an institution. It's sort of a rolling back of festivities. And I think it's appropriate to do that. It seems a little gauche to celebrate how great our country is when we are looking in the face the details of what was essentially a systematic cultural genocide.
Chris, you okay with them making this move?
I think it's grandstanding. They're not actually canceling anything. Everything was canceled because of COVID. So this was a move that had zero political cost. Nobody's upset because the fireworks are canceled at Parc de Luzy because they were already canceled. So you can, you know, have headlines of how sensitive you are with no political cost because you haven't upset anybody by canceling anything that was going to exist. And, you know, we have jumped the gun on this, calling it an atrocity. We don't know. And I'm perfectly open to the idea that it is an atrocity, that terrible things happened. That's entirely possible. And if it is, we need to hold people to account. But we don't know. We found some very troubling things, and we need to do an investigation. But there's much more than we don't know than we do know. And I can't jump to the conclusion that that there was a genocide before an investigation is done and we have the results. So I to me this seems like grandstanding rather than actually doing anything by the council.
I think the evidence is really piling up that something very grim happened at these residential schools. And one of the things that I did when this started to break was I went back and looked at the report filed that founded the residential schools, written by a guy named Nicholas Flood Davin in the 1870s. Their explicit intent was to take Indigenous children away from their families and basically turn them into Christian farm workers who had Anglo-Saxon culture. They're very clear that they don't consider First Nations people, Indigenous people, to have the same level of cultural development as white people. And even the founder of the school system, John A. McDonald, was explicit in that he said this country was supposed to be an Aryan country. So there was clearly horrible things going on here. They were explicitly trying to take these kids away from their families and strip them of their culture and religion. And if you listen to some of the stories that survivors of these schools tell, it really backs that up. It's a very, very dark chapter of our history. And the sad thing is it's one that a lot of people in this country don't learn.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there, Jeff, except I don't think these recent fines contribute to what you just said. I mean, the residential school program, who's going to defend that? I mean, nobody's going to defend that program. That was certainly by today's standards, that was horrific and wrong. But the recent findings... We don't know why those kids passed away. We don't know why they were buried in that way. We don't know when they died. And a bunch of those things we can find out with an investigation, and we need to. We need to do that investigation, and I think the country needs answers, and we do need to come to terms with our history. But I think we should do the investigation before we jump to the end and already come to the conclusion before we answer those basic questions.
I think an investigation at this point is unavoidable, but I think the argument is that those kids shouldn't have been there in the first place. They should have been at home with their families.
Yeah, I think that's one of the arguments, Jeff. But I think one of the other things that I go back to is I get the idea of the context and wanting the context of figuring out what happened to these kids and how they died and all those other things. It shows a complete disregard to their life, though, that they're buried in mass graves, unmarked. And to me, that's the big signal of clearly somebody was trying to hide something here. And I get in a legal world, I don't know if we'll ever see this down a legal world, legal line like we would have, war crime trials and stuff like that. But there's just so many glaring signs to say people were covering something up. This is at the very core of it. It's unmarked and it's a mass grave. That's a complete disregard to their life in the first place. So it shows that they didn't really care that much about.
There is clear evidence, I think, that these kids were not provided the dignity and death that we would expect them to be provided. Yeah. And we probably don't need an investigation to come to that conclusion. But I don't think we can conclude that there was necessarily a genocide at this point. And that's not saying that, I'm not standing here and saying there wasn't. I don't think we have that kind of evidence. But 100%, we can say that these kids were not provided the dignity and death that we would expect.
Here, let's leave it on this thought. Do either of you, because I don't have a whole lot of faith in an investigation in this in the long run, because I don't feel like anybody's going to have the documentation or things in the long run, and nobody's going to speak up and tell the truth, even whatever it is. Do either of you think that an investigation will actually land something concrete and more definitive proof of whatever?
I think we can rule things out on an investigation. And we have a lot of abilities when it comes to forensics, and I think we'll be able to tell whether these kids suffered from malnutrition. We'll be able to tell whether these kids suffered from abuse, and we probably won't be able to confirm whether many of them died from the Spanish flu, for example, because I don't think we're going to be able to see evidence of that. But I think we can exclude perhaps some of the worst possible things that we could imagine.
I think even what little we've investigated so far has turned up 800 or 900 concrete things. And I think the more we investigate, there will be more evidence that comes out. And I think the more that comes out, people are going to be astounded. It's a very, very dark part of our history.
Yeah.
And I think the reckoning with it is making a lot of people very uncomfortable, as well it should.
Absolutely should. Guys, I'm right up against the clock. I'm already getting the thank you, everyone, on the bottom of the screen. Thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
There's Jeff Bolachowski and Chris Richard. That is your Zoom table for this morning. Jerry Agar coming up after the 9 o'clock news. Thanks to Patrick back at the studio. Have yourself a wonderful day, and here's to life.